countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Caller Gas, celebrating 80 years, bringing energy to Ireland's homes and businesses.
It is indeed a morning like none other, which will set pulses racing here and across the Irish Sea. Think about London. Order! Will Boris get his Brexit deal over the line? Think about Tokyo. Will the Irish team get enough tries over the line to beat the All Blacks?
Johnny Sexton with Ireland's third try.
We're just going to have to wait and see. As Shakespeare says, time and the hour runs through the roughest day. This morning, we're parking the rugby and Brexit. This morning, Countrywide is focusing on the challenge ahead in tackling climate change and in particular, the role which the state, in collaboration with farmers, plans to play. As farm incomes remain under pressure, particularly for dry stock farmers on marginal land, the government says we need to plant more trees over the next 20 years. So is afforestation a win-win for everybody?
Forests absorb carbon from our atmosphere and store it in their trunks, roots and the soil.
In 1918, just 1% of the land cover in Ireland was planted. A century on, and that figure is at 11%, or 770,000 hectares. The national target is to reach almost 18% between now and 2040. So we need not only to protect what we have, but to plant more trees. And as part of our climate action plan, the government proposes to plant 440 million trees over the next two decades. For this to happen, farmers will have to embrace forestry. At a time when farming, and beef farming in particular, is under pressure, does forestry provide family farms with a lifeline?
But I think we can and must address the greatest challenge facing humanity, and that is the challenge of climate change. At the end of this, you know, we'll have a cleaner air, we'll have warmer homes, we'll have enterprises and farms who have adapted to the sustainability nature of the planet and how they can use that to build sustainable enterprises.
Between now and 9 o'clock, we explore the prospects for forestry in Ireland. What are the effects, good and bad, on the environment, biodiversity, the soil, the landscape and rural communities? This morning, we canvass many views, including a panel discussion presently. But first, Suzanne has been to the Chagask Open Day in Oak Park in Carlow this week. And during a walk in the woods, she spoke to its forestry development officer, Stephen Mahan.
What is growing here is Sitka spruce. It's a research plot where we are investigating the various provenances of Sitka spruce to see which ones are doing better in Irish conditions to measure performance, height growth, diameter, straightness of the stems, and so on. So that's what we're trying to do here, because this is definitely not a typical forest. We have a very young forest cover in Ireland. Probably about three quarters of all the trees that we have in Ireland are actually less than 30 years old. This is the first generation forestry that we have here in many cases, because 100 years ago we only had 1%. Now we're at 11%, still the lowest in Europe, and we're gradually building that up. And for Ireland to be effective and efficient in locking up carbon, we must ensure that we keep planting additional land at the same rate that we are doing now.
Can you explain to us how trees use carbon and where they lock it in during their life cycle?
Basically, as a rule of thumb, the faster your tree is growing, the more carbon it will lock up. For instance, a Sitka spruce tree in reasonable, suitable land, after 10 years, it may well be about 10 meters tall. It's really fast and therefore very good at locking up carbon. Hardwoods or broadleaves, they'll do exactly the same. Again, the faster your broadleaf is growing, for instance, ash, sycamore, alder or birch, they're fast-growing broadleaves, so they're also locking up a lot of carbon. If you talk about a slow-growing broadleaf, probably oak would be a fair example. It may be locking up about 2 to 4 tons per hectare per year, whereas a Sitka spruce, which is at the other end of scale, is going to be locking up close to 10 tons per hectare per year.
When you look at the climate action plan for 20 million trees yearly, where is the best place for those trees to go? What type of trees is best? And how do you incentivise farmers to plant?
Wow.
Big question.
Big question. How much time do you have? Yes.
It's Where can they go, first of all?
Right. First of all, I would suggest that they go to their local forestry advisor, because our job is to give people independent, objective, balanced information before they commit themselves to establishing a forest. People need to understand the pros and cons of forestry. For instance, if you're a farmer and you're thinking about planting a forest, I need to understand why you want to establish a forest. And I'll be asking you, right, Suzanne, are you planting a forest because you are really big into biodiversity? Is that important to you? Mm-hmm. And I'll be thinking about native woodland scheme. Or if you say, no, I'm thinking about the pension fund because in 30 years' time, I want to retire and I want to make a nice pension fund. And in that case, I will be talking to you about Sitka spruce. And then other people will also say, yeah, but I'm not interested in any of that. I have a couple of acres at home and I want to establish nice walks through my woodland.
And is continuous cover the option there then?
Continuous cover is very much dependent on the management that you want to do. Clear fell is a system. CCF, continuous cover forestry, is a system. And there are all kinds of systems in between. So various options there.
And continuous cover, if I wanted to plant, if I had 10 acres of suitable land I wanted to plant now, I can keep forestry in there, really, for 50, 100 years if the people that come after me choose to do it. But you can also harvest timber as you go along, as some of those species come mature. And do those forests have to be broadleaf, or can they be a mix of conifers?
Oh, it can be conifers, it can be broadleaves, it can be a mixture of the two. It is very much, again, dependent on your management. If you want to manage your broadleaves as a CCF, perfect. If you want to manage your conifers as a CCF, that's fine. It is very much your choice. But again, it's one of those things that when you're considering establishing a forest, you should be considering those questions before you jump and before you make that decision. It's easier to decide early on exactly what you want. And it's really important that you understand why you're planting a forest and that you understand all the various aspects involved there.
Changing to forestry is a big decision because it's a permanent change in the way the land is used in the future. So how does a farmer make that decision? Andrew O'Carroll is a succor farmer from Clara in County Kilkenny. In 2005, he decided that some of his land was more suitable to forestry than beef cattle. Walking with me yesterday afternoon through the raindrops in his well-matured plantation on the out farm in Curlay, Paulstown, Andrew takes up the story.
Well, we were suckler farming here. It was completely suckler farming, grass farm. And it was it's the block we're on here now is 30 acres and it's marginal ground. As anyone with marginal ground knows, in the springtime you could have a late turnout, and if the fall comes bad you can have an early winter. So the grazing season could be very short some years, and it wasn't very economical. Marginal ground on the edge of the Castlecomer Plateau.
And then you decided to plant this land. How did that decision come about?
Well, I took over this farm in 1996. A relation was very good to me. He went for the early retirement scheme, Pat Gittins, and he had farmed this ground before me with his cousin Michael. And I had some ground taken on an 11-month system or whatever, and I brought them to see that one day, and they were saying that if I could get more of it or get it on a long-term lease, that I should plant the block over the house, as they refer to it, that it was nothing but hardship. And they had farmed it for years and thought that the forestry grants were good and the premiums and that, and it was their decision or their idea. I wouldn't have thought of planting it, because I was delighted to get the farm and try and make the best that I could of it. But when we thought about it and looked at the returns from it, it seemed like a sensible decision to make. It has a place in everyone's enterprise if they have marginal ground, and it's an option to look at.
Is there still a little bit of apathy towards the idea of planting land among farmers?
There would be. That's a traditional thing, because, and it's a kind of a bugbear of mine with the planting scheme as it exists, that once you plant, it's gone for generations to come. Like, I could change enterprise from suckling to dairying if I had suitable land, or to tillage. But up to now, and hopefully not for much longer, if you decided to plant, you had to make the commitment that when you clear felled, you had to replant the forest.
So you can't put this back into pasture.
No,
you by law.
By law, right. You are making a decision for generations to come, which no other enterprise is forced to do. So that's a psychological barrier, and always has been, to people farming, to planting some of their ground. But I was in the lucky position that I was able to lease an equivalent amount of ground of good productive ground in place of this. So I wasn't reducing my farming area, and I was getting more productive ground that I can let cattle out in the spring, get a good grazing season, and it's not as weather dependent.
Do you think that there are more farmers like you around the country, suckler farmers, not making money from beef as we know well? Do you think more and more of them should look at this option?
It's not for everybody, but I always want to be classed as a suckler farmer who also has a forest enterprise. I never want to be that I'm forestry, you know. It fits into, like any business, you can have your eggs in a couple of baskets, and it suits me. People with marginal land, with the returns from beef farming, suckler farming at the moment, I'd say there's a lot of people thinking of a portion of their farm if it suits them. There might be a big kind of a barrier, a lot of bad publicity about Sitka spruce, etc. But there's different options. You can go broadleaf, diverse, continuous forest, can suit different people in different areas. Like, it's, you don't want the country taken over with Sitka spruce, but there's a place for it. I was probably lucky here that we have 20% diverse species, and a small portion of shielding or shelter belt along by one of the, is ash. Well, if this was dry ground and I had gone completely ash, I would be in trouble now. So, like, it's this particular site is suitable for Sitka spruce, but it's not for everybody.
What about the soil, the soil underground, and what about biodiversity? Are they benefiting, or are they in any way being compromised by the plantation here?
Well, it has to be a benefit having the carbon sink and the biodiversity. Like the farmyard is right beside this particular plantation, and up to about 2 years ago, I never knew what a pine marten was, but I do now. Because I've seen one coming out of a shed where I was storing straw, coming back out into the plantation, and seemingly there in the biodiversity, the grey squirrel is part of their food. So they're helping to bring back the red squirrel. So it's helping the ecosystem from that point of view. It contributes, as far as we're concerned, it's helping anyway, but everything in balance. There's cattle grazing in the field beside it, there's a farmyard there. It's everything in proper balance.
Andrew O'Carroll, who's a former winner of the RDS Forestry Awards, talking to me yesterday in Kilkenny about his decision to devote some of his pasture land to forestry, which grows alongside his main enterprise of suckler farming. And before that, we heard from Stephen Mahon of Chagas chatting to Suzanne Campbell. Now, the current target for forestry nationally is 18% cover by 2040. County Leitrim has already achieved that figure thanks to rapid afforestation in recent decades. 70% of the trees are fast-growing Sitka spruce. But the experience in Leitrim illustrates the real challenge in getting the balance right between the needs of the local communities, the needs of the environment, and the logic of commercial forestry. Ella McSweeney travelled to Leitrim, where she went for a drive in the woods.
This is the worst-case scenario of afforestation. It is planted on both sides of a lane here in Clontarf as we drive through it.
I'm in a car with Sean O'Loughlin, a retired dairy farmer from South Leitrim.
There is no way of stopping it, but it is completely wrong that we have to drive through a tunnel of Sitka spruce to drive to somebody's house. It is a civil right nearly taken away by what afforestation has done here.
Sean's driving me around his townland of Ahavas, which he says has totally changed in his lifetime from small farms in the past to forests of Sitka spruce today. So we've just got out of the car on this road, and the Sitka spruce is either side of us.
I suppose it's about 20 years old.
Do you remember when it wasn't a wood?
I do indeed. I done contract work with a tractor and round baler and a wrapper, and I remember doing the meadows where this Sitka spruce is now growing, owned by a local farmer, yeah. He has gone to his eternal reward, and I don't think there was family and some of his relations possibly sold it on.
And is your issue with trees in general here, or is your issue specifically about Sitka spruce?
Totally about Sitka spruce. We would have no Sitka spruce without the premium that is given to these people who plant these forests. It really makes me feel angry that this could be put on our landscape. Anything that is clear felled, I want it replaced with native woodland. All farmers should plant a percentage of their land and take that premium away from Sitka spruce and give it to farmers to plant native woodland.
And do you think that that will provide economic activity for Leitrim?
At least it wouldn't be the blight on our landscape that Sitka spruce is.
We heard that the government is going to plant 440 million trees by 2040 in Ireland. And I wonder what you make of that and where do you think the trees are going to be planted?
Well, we hope not in our county. That is a horrendous amount of trees. They're doing nothing for carbon sequestration if they're going to do Sitka spruce again.
Sean has been resisting Sitka spruce for decades. 26 years ago, a parcel of land beside his farm was sold to a private insurance company in Denmark. He and two other farmers protested so strongly that they managed to buy the land back. Using money donated from the local community, he's now mapping who exactly owns the Sitka spruce forests in Ahavas today.
There are Norwegian and Danish funds buying the land, investment companies. There are about four of them in Ahavas. And then we have just regular people from all over the country that has money to spend and thinks it's a great way of making money, which it can be for them, but it's very bad for the people that have to live beside it and live in Leitrim. It's a devastation to our county and our parishes.
We're just coming to the top of the hill. We're coming to the upper section of the spruce plantation.
Most Sitka spruce forests are cut down in one go and then replanted. But Sean O'Conlon, who lives in Drumahair in North Leitrim with his family, has decided to do something different. In 1987, he bought a 25-acre Sitka spruce plantation from two Germans. He's decided to slowly transform it into a woodland of native trees.
You can see, like, there's a hazel growing naturally. So these are all regenerating themselves. And probably if you look closely, look, there's an oak.
Little oak growing there.
Yeah, but growing by itself. So I didn't plant it. All I've done is started to let the light in. And it's all about keeping stability in the woodland. If I can take out more of the spruce, then I'll allow these to grow.
What is your opinion of what has happened in Leitrim and the kind of planting that's gone on?
There's nothing wrong with a Sitka spruce plantation if it's in its place and if you have other things. But 70% of what's grown in Leitrim is Sitka spruce.
And what about the argument that the Sitka spruce way of things provides employment and provides money for people and that's why it works?
A study showed that basically the economics of a continuous cover forest are comparable and certainly over the long term are much better because you always have your capital. There's less risk. It's a better carbon store.
You mentioned carbon. It's interesting. I mean, do you feel that in the future there's a possibility that farmers and landowners like yourself will be paid to store carbon?
If the government are prepared to pay hundreds of millions to Europe for the fact that we are not keeping our emissions targets, well, why shouldn't they pay farmers and people who are using their land to store carbon on an ongoing basis?
Back in Ahavas, Sean O'Loughlin's wife, Breed, expresses her anger at what has gone on.
I nearly get sick when I drive around Leitrim and see. You can't see anything, only look up in most areas. Sky is all. And if this continues, that's all we're going to see. We're not going to have sunshine. We're not going to have any wildlife. We're not going to have flora or fauna. We're going to have our water gone. And we have to keep making noise and we have to keep at it. We've no choice but keep it going.
That's Ella McSweeney, who is in Leitrim, speaking to Breed O'Loughlin, ending that report there. Now, some of your texts already to the programme on 51551. Maria says, please stress the importance of the message, the right trees in the right place. One of the biggest threats to species-rich and wet grasslands in Ireland in the future is inappropriate tree planting. We definitely need more trees, lots more, but not at the cost of the loss of other important semi-natural habitats. John says, let us be very clear, monocrop plantation of Sitka spruce is not forestry. This is greenwash. Stop calling this forest. Sitka is termed invasive in other jurisdictions. We need to ban Sitka spruce. A forest is a divisive, is a diverse ecological community. Cathy says, I live in North County Wexford and I'm seeing more and more removal of hedgerows and trees, not to mention the loss of biodiversity and wildlife corridors. Why are farmers, who are the great custodians of the land, doing this? We talk about planting trees, but we have to first save what we have. And one final one for now. Afforestation, the final nail in the coffin of rural Ireland. We need people, not trees. Ireland is a laggard in Europe when it comes to land cover under trees. In a climate emergency where solutions are needed fast, trees are part of the solution. And the government's climate action plan includes 443 trees planted by 2040, while landowners are making money from conventional food production, need alternatives. So it is a simple case of this being a perfect storm providing solutions to climate change, or is it the government's Paris Accord targets and farmers needing a boost in their incomes? Or is it more complex, more obstacle-ridden than that? Joining me now to discuss the pros and cons of increasing forestry cover in Ireland are Noel Kennedy, Forestry Advisor with Chagask, Anya Murray, an independent environmental consultant, Thomas Duffy, President of Machran Pharma, and Dara Little, Managing Director with Forestry of Vion, a commercial forestry consultancy. You're all very welcome. Good morning. Thanks for dropping by so early. Noel, I might start with you first. You're dealing with farmers on this issue all the time. When we look at the figures, and particularly the recent slowdown in the amount of land that is being planted, is it a reflection of an indifferent attitude which Irish farmers have towards growing trees as opposed to producing food?
I don't believe it is, Damien. Good morning, by the way. Farmers are businessmen and businesswomen. They are looking at the future of their farming enterprise, no matter what enterprise, be it from suckling right through to dairying and tillage. They want to do what's best for their farming enterprise and their farming family, and they want to guarantee a future. And I think at the moment there are many farmers out there reassessing where their future lies in relation to their enterprise. And forestry, certainly, going by the level of inquiries I deal with, is one of those options that they are considering.
I remember speaking to a young man many years ago who inherited a farm. He planted it, and one of his neighbours said, your father and mother would be turning in their grave to see what you've done to that land.
I'd be interested to go back and see how that young farmer has his experience with forestry has been. Every situation is different. Individuals' objectives are different. And there's definitely, I suppose, an issue with perception as regards what forestry has to offer. So, as you heard one of my colleagues there in one of the clips, Stephen, it's really all about making an informed decision, taking time over that decision and being satisfied that it is the right decision for your farming
enterprise. Okay, well, maybe, Thomas, you're the person to ask. You are a farmer. You're mixing with farmers all the time. Is there, a deep cultural resistance among Irish farmers to planting land?
Oh, undeniably, in my opinion. I think you mentioned about a kind of apathy towards it, but I think we have to be realistic. There's also hostility towards plantation in the wider community. But I think it very much depends on what the land type that's being planted, the level of it. As we see in Leitrim, the comments that were being passed there was because of dense areas of it, whereas there wouldn't be the same level of hostility where it's spread out throughout the entire landscape. I've certainly witnessed that myself. There has always been forestry in Cavan. Growing up, I remember there being forestry.
There's forests right across the road from where you live.
Exactly,
for many years.
I know that wouldn't actually be allowed now because it's a cutaway bog. But that has always been part of the landscape, and it has always been an element of it. And ultimately, we have to remember that people have the right to do with their own land.
But is it seen as a failure? Is there this bias towards forestry? If you were to tomorrow plant some of your land there near Virginia, would you be fearful? Well, not fearful, but would there be, whispering around that you failed as a farmer? Young Duffy has thrown in the towel.
Well, there is a parcel of my land that I'm currently looking at potentially planting in agroforestry because I think that might be the best land use for it. However, would there be an attitude? Again, yeah, there probably would be. There would be speculation about, and that comment that you just passed about, you know, your parents would be disgusted. There is that attitude in rural Ireland. But again, it does very much depend on what the land use. Farmers in the wider community would be incredibly hostile, seeing as they would see a good land being planted. And it goes back to the idea of, you know, a land use policy and what is the wisest places to put forestry. And where are the wisest places to produce food? Because we are in a world which is demanding more and more food.
And if you're not producing food, are you not a farmer?
Well, it depends on what the crop is. I mean, if you're growing crops for fibre or for biofuels, then yes, you're still considered a farmer. But I think it is important to differentiate. You can be a farmer with forestry, as one of the earlier pieces are. But I mean, if you have your entire land in forestry, you're a forester. You're not a farmer. Okay. Those things are different. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But they are different enterprises. As I say, crops are short rotation. They generate money in the local economy every single year, whereas trees are shorter, much longer rotation. They are a land use change. If I change to barley from grassland, I can go back to grassland. It's not land use change.
Anya Murray, on that point, that is the big issue, and it was mentioned earlier on as well by Andrew. You know, changing the purpose and the role of a patch of land from food production to forestry, it's forever. It can't be changed back by law. Whatever, practically, whether it can or not as well is another question. But by law, it can't be. It's a massive decision to make for future generations, isn't it? So can you understand why farmers would be quite reluctant to go down the route of planting some of their land?
Yes, I can understand that. There's an attachment to keeping land open and clear and grazed. And when generations past have fought for that land to keep it grazed, there's that fear that once you plant it up with forestry, with trees, especially with Sitka spruce monoculture, that it's gone. And a part of that, as Thomas has referred to, is the type of forestry. When you have those very dense plantations of Sitka spruce, they're impenetrable, they're inaccessible, they're very dark. There tends to not be any connection between the landowner, the farmer, or the local community and that forest. If we talk about farming, there's a connection. There's a daily walk of the fields, of checking on things, of knowing what you're doing with your land. Whereas when you surrender your land to a Sitka spruce plantation, it's an external company that comes in, plants up that forest and tends to manage that forest for you. So the connection is severed. Also, the accessibility of the land is severed.
Does the same not go for broadleaf plantations?
Not to the same extent. No, they're more walkable for a start. They're more pleasant to be in. You've got bird song. You've got colours. You've got autumnal colours.
But the same issue applies, that land is gone forever out of food production, whether it's broadleaf or Sitka.
Oh, out of food production?
Yes.
Absolutely. But it's the connection with the land that is lost with a Sitka spruce forest, a plantation that's being managed by somebody else. It becomes no longer yours as such. And in effect, there's thinnings after 10 years, 15 years, but you don't tend to have any interaction with that plot of land until it's clear felled 30 or 40 years down the line.
We're going to come on to the Sitka issue next, but just, and Dara, you'll have a lot to say on that, and based on our text earlier, don't dare call Sitka spruce a forest. It's not. It's an invasive species and all that. As I said, we will come to your opinions on that. But from your perspective, you're in the wood business, so you need this raw material. Are you worried about the future? Are you worried about the low uptake? Are you worried when you hear a young farmer like Thomas talk there about that apathy that exists towards forestry among farmers, among landowners, because it's landowners, the farmers, that you need to supply you with that raw material?
As a sector, we are worried that the afforestation levels have dropped to such low levels. And I think it's multifactorial. It's not just the attitudes of farmers to that. There's a lot of bureaucracy around planting land and so on and so forth. But there's also a lot of negative opinion out there about planting forests. Working in the forestry sector, we will plant what people want us to plant. If they want to plant broadleaves, we will plant broadleaves. We have no problem with that. As a sector, we're producing ever-increasing amounts of timber, which 80% of it gets exported out into the UK and Northern Europe and so on and so forth.
How much is the industry worth, by the way, to this economy?
About 2.3 billion.
2.3 billion. Yeah. And you were saying that there's more timber on the roads of Ireland than beef as such.
Yeah.
Yet we talk about beef and the impact of Brexit on beef, and we talk about the importance of beef farming to rural Ireland. Your industry doesn't get the same sort of prominence, and you're probably as exposed, are you? I know we're going in a bit of a tangent here, but you probably are as exposed to...
We're not as exposed. We wouldn't have the same tariffs under WTO, okay, for example, but we would have the same issues in relation to Brexit, where there's the UK economy is stagnating in large parts of it. There's not enough activity going on there. So the timber is basically backing up in the sector. But we'd also have the issue, because we're transporting a lot of timber into the UK, there's a whole issue of customs and a whole issue of plant passports and so on.
Mm.
So it's a logistical issue more for forestry than it is a tariff issue. But that will work its way out in time. So I wouldn't be hugely concerned about that into the long term.
Right.
But as a sector, we're producing, as I say, 3.6 million tonnes of timber a year at this stage. Nearly a million tonnes of that is coming from the private sector.
And you need that steady supply for your customers.
We do. And very often it's our customers are always saying to us, well, we need that sustainably produced as well. So most of the timber on the market in Ireland is certified under FSC.
But can you understand the resistance from farmers for planting to going down this
I can. Road? I've been working in this industry for 25 years. There's many, many reasons why people will not plant their land, and there's many reasons why people will plant their land. We would always say that forestry is an addition to your farm enterprise. We heard that in the pieces before this conversation. And those people, they're looking to basically make the best use of the land that they have. Whatever objective they have on that land, we will help them do that. That's our job. If they want to produce a pension, or they want to produce a steady income, or they want to produce an income that allows them to focus their enterprise on another enterprise, we will help them do that.
Right. That's
our job.
That's your job. Some more texts. I'd like any of you can jump in on this one. It's a simple text. We need food production, not trees. You can't eat trees.
We need both,
okay,
to be honest with you.
Mark says, are there any plans to replant Ireland's native temperate rainforests? There are now only a few places left on the West Coast, Kerry, Mayo, Donegal. Do you know anything about that, Anya?
There is a native woodland scheme which does support planting of native broadleaf woodlands, yeah, but the uptake is nothing compared to the uptake for conifer plantations.
Can I just jump in there, sorry, with that? Yeah. The native woodland scheme is becoming increasingly popular, and the Forest Service have made it much more accessible in recent years through integrating it with more commercial forestry. So there's a lot more interest in it. I certainly found that nearly 40% of our inquiries are for native woodlands. So we are working into that space. There's more and more people interested in planting native woodlands than there were in the past. The soil types that are coming up that are more conducive to native woodlands are becoming more and more available to us. So I believe in the future we will be planting much more native woodlands.
Noel, do you want to come in there?
I was just going to make the point, that there actually has been a dramatic increase in the interest in native woodlands, and not just potentially as an alternative to Sitka spruce, where people may have a difficulty with planting Sitka spruce, but also because what has happened over the past number of years is that the type of land that was traditionally eligible for forestry is becoming more narrow. But to be fair to the department, they are now, I suppose, opening up an opportunity to plant native woodlands on sites that previously would have been difficult for other...
Including bogland. Isn't there a plan this week to do that as well, to plant trees on
the Bordamona?
Yes.
I don't know
whether that's...
There was an announcement from the Minister, I think Minister...
Good Britton idea, Anya.
Not necessarily. We have to evaluate. The reason why they've said they're doing it is for carbon sequestration, to soak up carbon from the atmosphere. But a peat bog naturally soaks up carbon
from
the atmosphere.
So they don't need to do
it. We have about 3% of the Earth's surface is covered in peat bogs, and these sequester more carbon than all the world's forest. So planting it up with trees isn't necessarily going to benefit carbon. If you want to store away carbon and do a climate action, re-wet and restore the peat bogs. Don't necessarily plant it up with trees.
If I come in there again, just in relation to that initiative there, I don't think they're proposing to plant up boglands that are actually storing carbon. There's actually large parts of the Borden Mona estate that have basically been stripped of bog. And they're the areas they're focusing on.
That's right, they've called it unused bog, but that bog should be restored and not planted up.
Okay, broadleaf forests are perfect for pig rearing. Farmers would have done this in the past. That's from one text from Ger. How can we have confidence in a system that allowed sitka to be planted on 6 foot of bog in Leitrim in 2019? That's a text there from Pat. I just wanted to talk about this sitka spruce because a lot of people listening outside of our bubble here, they haven't a clue what we're talking about unless you're actually affected by it, Anya. What is the problem with sitka spruce? What is it and why is there such opposition towards it?
The sitka spruce is a non-native exotic conifer. It comes from the Pacific coast of North America and it's a good tree to grow on bad land, on wet, thin soils, on boggy land. And what we've done since the 1930s and 1940s is plant up massive tracts of our uplands primarily with row after row of sitka spruce. They're very dark, they're very impenetrable. I think most of their listeners will know that when you go up to the mountains and you go through these sitka spruce plantations, they're dark, there is very little bird life, there's no understory, there's no plants
and
animals that grow underneath it.
Sitka spruce, as Anya mentioned there, it is a very adaptable tree. It grows very fast. It grows straight. It is a large volume producer. I think we have to put it in a perspective that the land that was available for forestry, say, 30, 40 years ago, was most suitable for conifer and sitka spruce. But most importantly, it was land that was extremely difficult for farming. And it's very important to make the point that it was the farmers in the last 30 years who are planting the land. And just to go back to the Leitrim report, 70% of the land planted by private owners in Leitrim is by Leitrim farmers. And so I think this
30% then by investors or whatever.
Well, investors, and it depends on what you...
But you can understand how communities would object to these huge, as you said, fast-growing, dense forests, lifeless sort of forests are growing. But are they carbon sinks?
They're huge carbon sinks.
Right. So what about that, Anya? If a beef farmer was to be making a decision whether he or she was going to actually plant land in sitka spruce or not, what would you say? Or continue beef farming?
There's a number of different factors that are relevant. So if that beef farming is on species-rich grassland, as one of your texters said, there's a huge value in the biodiversity and the bird life associated with those rough pasture. So to plant that up with any kind of a tree, if it's a conservation value land, isn't necessarily a good idea. So it all depends on the land. But then if you're planting up continuous cover forestry, and we heard from Stephen Mayan about that report and from Ella, the second interviewee that Ella went to in Leitrim about continuous cover forestry. That's a system where you've got a diverse forest with conifers and broadleaves all mixed in. You've got mixed age structures and mixed stands, and that's really good for biodiversity and much better for carbon sequestration than a sitka spruce plantation. You get about 50 tonnes of carbon more per hectare is soaked up by a continuous cover forest.
But is that commercially good for you and for employment? A lot of people employed in the timber business, if we were to take Anya's proposal there, but and just reduce sitka spruce, what effect does that have on your sector?
If you adopt different civil cultural regimes, first of all, they must be the right regimes for the site. Continuous cover forestry will work on a lot of properties, but it won't work on all of them. The continuous cover forestry produces timber over a longer period of time, and that's very good. That may suit people with their objectives. That's absolutely correct. I would disagree that sitka spruce is an ecological desert that I've been hearing so many times. I walk through sitka spruce forests all the time. I hear lots of bird life. I see pine martens, red squirrels, lots of things happening there in those forests. We don't plant monocultures of sitka spruce anymore. We haven't done that for over a decade and a half or even 20 years. Every forest has a maximum of 30% sitka spruce. 30% then is given over to biodiversity and non-native broadleaves. This is a very, very large area for a farmer to give over to nature. And I don't think that's properly recognised in the system.
Okay, speaking of not being properly recognised, Thomas, I suppose nearly every farm in the country, the perimeter of it is surrounded by a hedge or a ditch, if you want to call it that. I think 7% of the land cover in Ireland is hedgerow, which is a linear, I suppose, biodiversity
I suppose, funny part, if you want to call it that. Yeah. You don't get the credit, it seems, for that.
No. I mean,
is that unfair?
Oh, 100%. And every single farmer would agree on that. In terms of their proper definition, those are actually called linear woodlands. That's their proper title. That's their classification. The problem is, under the FAO's definition for carbon sequestration, which would allow us to properly measure them, there's a requirement for woodlands to be, I believe it's 2 metres wide and 2 metres high, or something to that effect. The problem is the management of hedgerows are so variable. I might try to manage my hedgerows in the appropriate way, you know, 1.4 metres wide, 1.8 metres high. However, my neighbour might cut it every single springtime and every single...
What about that text earlier, farmers are cutting away hedgerows?
No, that's completely illegal. It is illegal to remove a hedgerow and not replace it with a similar length of hedgerow in another place. And it has to be in place before the original hedgerows. I don't want to comment on illegal activity, but certainly we don't condone it. We don't accept it. There are comments routinely passed that farmers are ripping out hedgerows left, right and centre. And from what I see, it's utterly unfounded. I know there can be, certainly when sometimes when young farmers might take over a parcel of land, or when a new entrant may enter a parcel of land, there may be changes in cleanup. But I mean, recently I saw one wildlife group actually sharing a picture which they were claiming was cutting away a hedge, which was in actual fact coppicing, which is good behaviour to picking up the hedge.
Anya, just briefly, and then we'll finish up. But I just wanted to put it to you that, you know, here we are encouraging farmers in this country to plant land, and in particular maybe good land, if we go down this road of every farmer plant a hectare or whatever like that, and then you see what they're doing, raising the Amazon forest to raise cattle. Can you understand the frustration of Irish farmers when they're being told on the one hand to do this, put aside some of their good grassland to grow trees, and then see what's happening in the Amazon? It doesn't make sense, does it?
Well, we always have to start at home, and in Ireland we used to have a lot of woodlands. We now have one of the lowest woodland cover in Europe. So the onus is on us to act responsibly, and our land is a valuable resource. We have to manage it really well, and we have to manage it for water quality, for biodiversity, for people, and we can do that with mixed forestry that delivers economic returns, continuous economic returns with continuous cover forestry, as well as benefit and connect with the community and the people and the landscape.
Noel, very briefly, are there enough incentives there for farmers to meet these targets that the government are setting down and that they're going to have to be very much part of?
I think the incentives that are there are actually very generous, and I think what's even more significant is the range of woodland and forest options, going from your commercial timber production right through to the agroforestry that Thomas mentioned. But the beauty of the current scheme is that you can mix and match those to achieve multiple objectives. And just to go back to Anya there, all of the things she mentioned about biodiversity, water protection, that's what our modern forests are doing.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, all right. I'm sorry time has caught up with us. As I said to you before you came in here, time will fly. We could do 2 or 3 programmes on this particular issue. I just want to say the Forest Owners Co-op, made up of environmental farmer members from the Kerry Cork region, are organising an Info Action Forestry event at the Celtic Ross Hotel, Roscarbery, on the 21st of October coming up, running from 9 to 3. So lots of guest speakers there. If you want to find out a little bit more about forestry, get to that on the 21st in Roscarbery.